Welcome to The Human Side of Research, conversations to inspire and help you advance in your scientific career. In today's episode, I talked to Professor Maria Barbosa and Assistant Professor Rumiana Karlova about leadership, assessment committees, tenure track skills, and much more.
Everything has to be standardized, and I think the university should be the place for non-standards. If someone wants to have a group with 15 PhDs and the other one is really good and wants to have a group as a professor with 5 PhDs, why should not this be allowed? I don't understand this. Mm-hmm.
You can't have it 100% your way. You have to adapt. You have to also adapt to the system sometimes because you can't change it easily. But I consider myself as part of that change.
My name is Geza and I'm your host. Today you listen in on my conversation with two professors of Wageningen University, Rumiana Karlova and Maria Barbosa. Starting out with questions around leadership, we took a deep and broad dive into tenure track life at Wageningen, covering diverse questions like what's the basis of trust, what are important skills for tenure trackers to develop, how to approach your assessment committee, how the system could be improved, and many other topics. It was a fun and rich conversation, and I hope you enjoy it too.
So my name is Maria Barbosa. I work in a group of bioprocess engineering. I'm a full professor, and I work specifically on photosynthetic microorganisms. I have a group, I think, around 35 people working in this topic. My passions are my two children, and the piano. So this is also where I can really relax and get my head completely empty. I think those are my two passions.
Yeah, thank you. And Rumiana?
My name is Rumiana Karlova. I'm an assistant professor at Plant Physiology, Plant Science Group at VUL. And I'm working on crop stress resilience, abiotic stress like drought and salinity. And my passions are also my two kids, and as well as hiking in the nature. And I also enjoy music, classical music, but also any good music.
Great, thank you. We're talking about leadership today. So when you think about the term leadership in academia, what comes to mind? What are we talking about?
From leadership, you have to do it by example. Huh? Someone that is engaging something, someone that has a vision on the research, but also someone with a person feeling, so social, that can also bring a group with them. So not directive. Huh? So for me, that's another kind of leadership. When I look at my preferred kind of leadership and also at myself, I believe it's more as by example and by deserving this leadership of bringing people along with engagement with your content also, but also with the social part. Eh? Mm-hmm. So being a person's person, eh? So that you can really get along with people and can really look at the strength of each one and how to use it. And I believe that's very important to have a group running and healthy.
So you're saying you inspire people and people also want you to be the leader? How do you create that when you've been elected the leader or you get a position and then suddenly you're a leader of people?
I think you take the responsibility and you take the responsibility on what you do. You also take the steps forward and you develop the vision. And also how you bring this vision to the people, it's also up to them to see whether they are alone or not, and if they want to work with you. So I think there's nothing more rewarding than having people. Sometimes they come here and they also to work here and they say, because I've heard about your work and what you're doing and the group, and I would really like to work here in this group with you. So we have people coming from different places in the world that came to Wageningen and also to work with the ALGE, with ALGE Park, which got known. But it's I think it also goes naturally. It also somehow, we also learn how to lead, how to have contact with different people and to understand it, because also in the beginning, also that's difficult. That's many different cultures, many different people, and you have to deal with that. And that's a process that you also learn. But somehow it also comes very natural, at least in me. I want to make things happen. I want to do it. I'm very motivated with the work. I believe in what I do. And that's already one step to this towards this leadership, I think.
Mm-hmm. If you don't believe in what you do, it's very hard to get people along.
No, I don't. I think it's impossible to get people along if you don't really believe in what you do.
Yeah.
You cannot inspire people if you yourself are not passionate about what you do.
Mm. What does leadership mean to you?
To me, it's actually related to the word guru, which in Sanskrit means teacher or somebody that could shed light. And this is actually, I also looked for the definition, and the definition of that of a true guru is one who has attained self-mastery, that is complete control of the ego, and that communion with the universal conscious. And this is also how I see my role. Of course, I'm not a guru, not far, not close to that. But I think we should put, as leaders, our ego aside and really embrace what the people need, what the organization needs, and really be above our ego.
Mm-hmm. So can you, maybe both of you, give an example where you had to put your ego aside in for the greater good, let's say?
Sometimes feel that somebody, even from my group, is trying to overrule me or dominate me. And that I could put my ego aside in that respect and try to help. And then with the process of helping, show that I am at the place I am because I can help and I can lead this project and I can lead this person and help him also to get behind this, you know, kind of ego. I say so, I think so, and I have more experience, so maybe I know better. But I would not do it in the direct way, but really try to have the process to show, to give the example.
Mm.
That takes time.
So
that is not something you can do in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And it is also a process when people would see you as a leader, but that also takes time because you need to show and to prove that you can lead. And of course there are different ways of leading, and what we have at the moment is an old stereotype that was built up based on maybe male dominance, or it is just a stereotype. There are certain criteria that are told that leaders should have, which I think nowadays are really changing, because you can have different ways to show or to be a good leader.
Mm.
And there should not be a stereotype, I think, on that.
No, that's true. But also, for example, and I know that's a choice, you also see very labs that are called the last named people.
Yes.
Right? Yeah. The Bosset lab. Yeah,
and then people know that.
And this is the American system also. Yeah. But it's about one person's lab, while in fact a lab, it's about a group of people, because alone I cannot do anything. So this you also see, I mean, I would never do that, but it's very personal. That shows also that it's I don't have to put my ego aside. I don't think I have a huge ego. Of course, everyone has a certain ego. But when you say putting the ego aside, is that, for example, I don't want to be always the one being representing the group. So I very often ask other people, can you go and represent the group? Can you do that? So to give opportunity that you're not centered, that everything is not centered on you, but on a group. And that, in fact, goes a little bit against the old way of professors also. Yeah.
And also to show that everyone in the group is valuable at the same level. Everyone is contributing. It doesn't matter if you're a technician, or if you're a PhD or a postdoc or a senior scientist. And to give people that value that they belong also to the group and they contribute, you indeed should invite them and should make them feel equally valuable. And if you indeed only have your name as this is my group, it's not.
Yeah, so many interesting things to talk about here. So I'm curious how both of you do that in daily practice. So what does that look like? Trying to translate the putting the ego aside to the way you interact with the people that you lead.
Well, I mean, you first, I mean, in all, it's also the way you interact with the people. Mm-hmm. And you don't show these hierarchies, directives, so you bring along people with the process. So I think what asking, what do you think? It's not saying you have to do this, but asking in a, what do you think about doing this? Or, I mean, I think that's also, for example, in this activity-based working, what we're doing is that we decided that everyone does activity-based working. Mm-hmm. And so from the student, the master students, to the full professor. So we also give, it's also leadership by example, but it's also a way how you look at your colleagues in different positions, younger, older, with different functions as a technician, which is different from a professor. So it's a little bit a more flat, so not hierarchic, more social way of having a group. But what you say in the daily is also in the way you communicate, the way you talk to people, the way you ask them their opinion. So, for example, we have team meetings and with the whole group with 30, so all the technicians are also there. And at the end, I always discuss and ask them also to give what's happening in the lab, to give them the word also to discuss, to say something about their work. So also to say, well, when something goes wrong or goes right, you also should be able to say both things. Eh? So this is not well done, but this has been fantastic. So both things, then you also able to say in this way. You create a very transparent way of communication
and safe environment. So if the environment is safe, you can talk about also things that don't go well and people will not get emotional or offended.
Yeah.
But it is also indeed to believe in people. If people have the feeling you value them and you believe in them, you believe in their abilities, there is no limit of what they could do.
Mm-hmm.
I had students in the past, they would come and ask me, do you think I am good enough to do a PhD? And I would say, why do you doubt yourself? You can do anything you want. And then I could see the emotion behind that, you know, I can do this. And I had it for myself. For myself, it's also important that, and it was important in the past that somebody would tell me, you're good, you should go for it, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very important
that recognition.
Recognition, yeah. But also that you believe in the ability of the people and not just believe in your own abilities and you're the dictator and everybody should listen to you, because that does not create this creative and safe environment where people would like to work and develop also themselves. Of course, nobody is perfect. And also showing that you are not a superstar, that you also have your weaknesses. I have students, they struggle with, they are a bit introvert, they struggle with presentations, and I would say, you know, I also struggle with this, but I'm fighting it every time. And that helps, that you are not this superhero that in that position can walk on water and, you know, be the best person. Mm. It's not, we are real people. We have our weaknesses. What is important is to develop yourself constantly, never to stop trying to develop your weaknesses and turn them into something positive.
I had this coach, and I also said it, I think it was very important to me that he said, Maria, I said with all the things I could not do well, and the coach told me, Maria, don't focus on that. What can you do well? And that's where you should focus your energy and develop, because if you can excel, in something, yeah, that will also give you a lot of self-security, of it will really be very important for your further development. So it was a learning lesson also for me when they said, Maria, we forget, you know, you're not so good in planning, you were sometimes late. But what can you, what are your strengths? What can you do really well? Where can you excel? And if you excel in something and you develop further, that's also how you can grow also and also bring people along. Yeah.
And indeed, so we started working with Maria like 1 year ago on a project, on a EU project. And I met you once at the reception by accident, and then Maria just hugged me. How are you? And that made my day. You know, I had a bad morning, and I had a very stressful day ahead. And just that one hug and how are you made my whole day. And I had the strength to go on. So this is also very important, to be people's people, to be personal also, in a way. It really gives you that feeling of we work together and we take care of each other and we help each other. I think for me at least it's very important.
Very social creatures.
I am coming from another culture, but I think it really helps.
Yeah, I was gonna ask, I can imagine some people thinking now, I really don't want to hug the people at work because work is work and home is home, you know. Do you sometimes experience that when you try to be personal, that people say, okay, no, I want to keep a distance?
I have learned how to know how to be personal with the, I know with whom I can be more personal. So it's also something that you learn. So with the Rumiana, I will not do this to everyone. I'm not going to have everyone. So, but for example, when I came, I'm Portuguese. So when I came here for my PhD in 1999, with Portuguese, we are very touchy. So now, in fact, after so many years, 24 years, I have learned how you go with also, and I'm also older. But I remember that I used to, you know, just a touch or someone on the shoulders or so. But some people, what you said, they don't like it, and you have to respect that. So this is also a learning curve also for me, but also now I know really who I can, I think one of the things I know is to know people relatively well, and I also know where the limits are. And if someone tells me, if someday I would touch someone and someone would tell me, I would just accept it. So I would say sorry, it was not meant in a bad way. But we should also not be so afraid of contact. Mm. I know in this modern times and also with all the situations, it's an issue in our society. There's how far can you go in work and related. But I do think that that I know. So what you said, and I also have a colleague here that every time I come, she comes and hugs me. It's a woman also, and she says, and I find it really warm, and I really enjoy it. But I think it's very personal. I think we should also not live in squares, in defined. For everything the same, and I think we're going in this direction, and that everything has to be in a certain way, and also for relations with people, we cannot do that, I think, because everyone is different and takes an have to, and also has have to, also has different needs.
Yes, it's true. Also with the students as well. Also in my group, I have people that are very focus on the work, and they, for example, would not like chit chat it's like waste of time, and I respect that. But and there are other people that constantly need to chat or to be reassured or to you know, and I also make time for this, and I'm personally also very goal oriented and more to the point, but I also have that need of being also more personal, of course, not with everyone, but that is a kind of family feeling that I have. And indeed, it's true, it's difficult to create something like that in your group when you have completely different cultures and different values. But if we respect the wishes and the values of everyone, I think if there is a common sense of respect, then it's okay, because people know, okay, you don't need to come to this party if you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It's not obligatory. But if you want, you can help and you can try to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
For example,
I totally agree.
Outside of work organized.
How do you do that if you're building a group or new people come in? For example, new PhDs or postdocs come in. How do you make sure that they learn the culture? Is this something that you do in the beginning to welcome them, to explain to them, you know, how the group works? Or is it something that they figure out by themselves? Or?
Oh, we explain. We explain also the processes. So first we introduce them to the group.
Mm-hmm.
So and then also the process, the meetings and what we discuss in the meetings, what we discuss in our individual meetings or in the group meetings. So this explanation we give. And we also now putting a body close, someone that would be the body of this PhD student. So another PhD student. So it helps the PhD students to feel comfortable in the group and also to show the labs and everything around so that the PhD will not be lost in the beginning of his PhD. So that's what we are doing and trying to do at the trying to implement at the moment. Sometimes it doesn't work so well, just because people are very busy, and sometimes do not take the time. That's an issue, I think, in also our modern society and running lives.
Yes, that's true. That's an issue also in the tenure track system. We have to do so many things that you don't have time, but you need to invest time indeed also for the group and for the people and to connect. But also as scientist, I think, at least for myself, I'm a creative person. So I need my space. I need the time to think, maybe even to go to the museum and have a look in art or so and then get inspiration. Because I'm constantly thinking if I have an idea, but I need time to distract and be creative. There is no other way. And now we are more and more...
Do you find the time? That's
I try to push to find the time. And also, the thing is that I could never stop. If I have an idea, I could never stop thinking in my head to develop it. Even in the art, which is not good. I'm trying to restrict that. That's why if I would have more time, like I would take one day to the museum or I take my group to the museum and we can have a team building, creative team building. I think we should fight for this time,
for this
because
one.
We are academia, we are university. It's the same, spend time with the students to discuss and to inspire them as well. Or not just what we do, but that we are in academia, we should be the role models, even to the societies. I mean, we are the highly educated people of the society, so...
Yeah, so you're both saying good leadership takes time because you have to invest the time in the people. And we started with getting rid of your ego when you make decisions and when you communicate with people. But I mean, Maria, you're already very established and Rumiana is still on the upward ladder. Do you feel that you can get there with the way that you do it now? Or do you feel that it's hard to adhere to all the criteria that you get in tenure track to, you know, get to the next step?
Yeah, so I decided for myself that, of course, it's important to get there if you work hard. But for me, the process is more important. So I like to do it my way and I want to be myself. So I also have my motto of each year asking myself what I'm busy with and do I like it? Do I still like it? And if I don't, I have to change something to keep going, because if I don't like it and I know myself, then I have to be happy at my work, to be creative and to be able to contribute. So this is and also to focus. Of course, you can't have it 100% your way. You have to adapt. You have to also adapt to the system sometimes, because you can't change it easily. But I consider myself as part of that change. And I think Maria and all the other female people in the tenure track and professors, we are part of the change and we have to be persistent. So I will not easily give up. But indeed, for me, I decided I will be myself. I think the way I am, I'm strong enough. I have the abilities to do it, to be a good leader. I've seen much worse examples than myself in the past of leadership, so I know how not to do it. and indeed go for it. But I have to try to keep myself satisfied with what I'm doing, but also my group. That's why I take the time. Maybe it's not the most efficient way, but
I think that's the best way. I think that's the best way, to always be close to yourself. And that's a question that a lot of tenure trackers do. We discussed, like, how do I play the game? And you should not play a game, because you will not make it if you play a game. If you're not close to yourself at the end, you will not be able to succeed.
And if you are not close to yourself, you can't use your strengths.
Your strengths.
And what makes you, your strengths are your uniqueness, right? You have unique abilities that you develop because the way you are. So you have to use that. Yeah. I think that's very important.
I mean, it's also in the tenure track, you ask for a lot of things. And some of these things, I think you will be better. Good, very good, excellent at some things, and the others will be a little bit less. But I think it's also accepted to a certain extent. Eh? So I believe if you really excel in some of the things, that will not be an issue if you are a little bit less on the other ones. I mean, there are the thresholds, and this is what we're discussing. If these thresholds here are quite high, in other universities are a little bit lower. But there are nuances here. And at the end, it's about the balance. Eh? So I think there will always be things that you have to do that you're less good at, everyone in every job. It's the balance between these things that you really enjoy, that really give you energy, and the other that takes a lot of energy to do. Eh? Mm. So and it's the balance. If it's a positive balance, I think that's good. When it comes to the other side, then it's time to think. And I think everyone should make this annually. I also still do it. So what am I doing? Where am I going? How has that been going? And also to myself, self-reflection. I think it's really important to take the time to do that for all tenure trackers, for all professors, I think. I believe that's extremely important.
Yeah, because I heard you both say stay true to yourself. Many tenure trackers then ask, how do I know what kind of leader I want to be? Do you have advice for that? How do you get behind what kind of leading style suits me?
I think that's also how we started this conversation. You ask, how did you? I mean, it's also what it was never my dream or to become a professor. Huh? So that's how opportunities came, and that's what you enjoy doing. It led to this path. And so it is a little bit, it went in a very natural way. Of course, along the path, I had coaches, I had courses on development, which I think it's important also to learn the self-reflection, what should you look at. I had a very, during my tenure track, I had a coach, a professor in another group here who was extremely important, very efficient, focused. We met every 3 months, and he was a very important person for me during this development. But somehow I think that you have to find it also yourself. You can get a lot of tools, but it has to be close to you, also to your personality, and you can develop a lot of things, but I think it's something that's somehow intrinsic to your personality, your leadership style.
And indeed, that's why you should not play the game and fake your style, because that would always be seen by people. And even students, they notice you're going to be more distant because you want to keep the mask. And that is something you should not do, because we are spending most of our time at work, and if we are fake people at work, then at one point you have that feeling of, you know, you are not true to yourself. Mm. I think the best is to have your own style based on who you are and how that it comes natural to you, and develop that. Mm.
No, indeed, it is. During one of my postdocs, I had a professor somewhere else, it was not in Wageningen. There was this professor that came to the group meetings and said, "You are so lucky that you can work with me." That's how he started, exactly. But that's how it is. Where I come, well, in Portugal, it's very hierarchic. That's what they say. What's difficult is to get there. When you get there, then you can do everything. And that was, I stayed there for 1 year because for me, and then I left. I decided to leave myself because I was extremely unhappy on how the work, how the group worked. But this was also something that I never forgot. And now I see I'm so lucky when I have excellent people working with me. Eh? So that's what makes a group. And that's really another mentality. And that's more the classic old fashioned professorship, at least in Portugal, there's still quite a lot. I think here less, we still have these directive egos, big egos professors, but I think it's decreasing also. Anyway, I think that also women are more social creatures, people. I think that also plays a role. But that's, I hope it's changing, and I think that makes it a very much more open and better working, also to get to your goals. I mean, people working with fear, they will not lead to anything. I mean, it is not efficient. Also, if you think also about efficient and getting things done, working in fear will not lead you to anything.
Kills your creativity as well as your motivation.
It creates bad environment where people need go to work with fear with stomachache.
Or people leave.
Has that happened in your groups recently, or that people
left
because they were stressed out or scared? Or
we had in the group a technical person that left because it was, I think, too much. But it was not with the social, but he felt very stressed with all the responsibilities. Mm. So it has burned out. We have had one or two in the group, and that is also that's also something I try to pass. I mean, we all get, sometimes we have a lot of deadlines, you get a little bit stressed, but you have to be able to somehow make relativize things. So to say, well, I'm stressed, but it doesn't step per step, day per day. Don't get stressed already. And sometimes I have too many things. Huh? So I also feel, well, now it's, then I have to sit down and think, well, things first. Huh? So take your time and think about just one thing now, what needs to be done. And this is also something that I think it's important, because in our society now it's everything happening at the same time. It's very fast, everything with the emails, communication.
All the information.
It's a lot of information, a lot of small things that you need to do. And sometimes it can be overwhelming. So I also realize this. That's also, it has to be the way you address it, the way you, your perception to that, the way you feel it. I think that's where, I think there should be a lot of training also for this. Because I also see now PhD students, they feel it's also getting more competitive, they feel a bit more stressed. I remember my PhD period, it was here in Wageningen, it was one of the most fantastic times I had. I had one project, my project, only one, and
freedom to
operate. And it was really a fantastic period. So something, and it was in 1999, I started to 2003. So something has changed, because I see some tension and more competition between PhD students. And this has to, I don't think it's only in the university. I think it's in our society that there's so many stimuli from everywhere, so that it's difficult sometimes, let's say, to keep the track, to say, well, now, to take a deep breath and put things aside, relax.
And not to stimulate your brain all the time, not watching things, spending time on the internet, on your phone. But it's the same for our students and the way we teach, because nowadays people are used to look on internet, Google, and search for an answer. And we should educate our students and PhD students to think for themselves, to be able to filter the information, what's important, what's not important, but also to keep on thinking. We would never discover something new in the future if we lose that ability to think, and also to be able to assess the information, to filter the information. That's very important. So in my lectures, I always ask a lot of questions to the students. I try to make them think, start thinking about what we are talking. And in that way, of course, this is also active learning. They are going to remember the talk and my slides much better because they will activate their thinking. But this is what I also try to do it with my master students and PhD students. Always think, why? Question, why is this? Why? Why do we do it that way? Can you do it in another way? And that's very important, but that takes time as well, this process. But I think it's our goal. We should, in academia indeed, try to keep that thinking process.
So you prohibited ChatGPT from...
I think there is a policy of rule for that.
There is a policy of rule for ChatGPT. Even my kids at the high school, they are using ChatGPT.
They report
that. Well, they ask questions, but they also critic. I was very... My daughter, my mother was doing it for something with history and asked to order in chronological some moments in history to order it in chronological order. It was wrong, and she said, "Mama, it's wrong." It was not. But you have to always look, even to ChatGPT. You have to really be critical in what you see.
But this might be even the way for our future papers, how they are going to be written using this ChatGPT, and we only add keywords. But of course, the question is, how far should we go relying on these tools, and should we actually rely on ourselves and think and write? It will be less efficient, but it's needed. We have to maintain this thinking process.
Yeah, going back to that, as a leader, we talked about, I think you said that, Maria, that courses for tenure trackers are also needed to learn skills to deal with all the input that they get and to be able to zoom out and do things in, you know, one thing at a time, is what you said. What are those skills that they need to learn, do you think?
I said, for example, self-reflection. I think it's something very important. And I think that's also they need to get the tools. They also need to know to get the self-reflection, to get to know themselves. Huh? I think that's very important. And then there are also, of course, tools that, you know, different kinds of, for example, leaderships. There are different kinds. Also to see where do I, with my personality, the way I work, the way I enjoy working, which kind of leaders do I think? I mean, it's also good to have a coach or advice or to show you what there is so that you can also position yourself in what there is. And then when you position yourself in a kind of a leadership style, you will also get tools related to this style that you can use. I think that is an important, because I mean, these things I did not know before I went to such a course. Mm-hmm. And there are these different styles of leadership. And so if you are this and you are that, what kind of personality you have, also these tests that are also done. So it's also explained. So it also helps with your self-reflection, also knowing yourself, and explains also a lot in you. And that gives you the possibility to make a more deeper self-reflection on who you are, what you want, how do you stay close to yourself. Mm. So because we don't learn these things as a PhD, or you learn during the tenure track, we learn a lot. And I think this is very valuable to also coach personal coaches. I think I have had two, and they have been very important. I had, let's say, an internal coach somewhere here or from university, a professor, that was also just to ask feedback, to talk to people, not to be afraid. That what you said, after all, it's all people.
Yeah.
It's the Nobel Prize. It's also a person. Yes. I mean, but it is. In my previous work, I had in EMBO in Germany. So I've met some Nobel Prizes also having dinner, and it was in the EMBO. And it was, and at the end, in the beginning, I was a bit, oh, this is, but at the end, they're just people. And that's also what I say also to a lot of our students and the group. I mean, we are all, we can be professors, but deep, we are just persons. Just like you. And we are all different, but that's this. Some people get nervous. Oh, the professor or the chair is coming, but we are at the end. We are all people, and I think realizing that it's very important for everyone.
Yeah. I do have it. Sometimes I ask questions at the seminar or so, and I always ask critical questions and to the point. And sometimes people feel like scared or intimidated. Which we should really allow ourselves, of course, if they know me, they know, I mean, I am not a scary person, but I could ask critical questions, but we should, in science at least, I think we should be also taking up criticism well, and that is also something you have to work on. If you get too emotional about that, you have to work on during these courses and with the coach. Because that's very important. You should not see it as a personal attack, but this is really about science, and it helps you to become better. Or it helps your research, but also your way of thinking. And we should have this critical mass of people that think critically. This will be the only way that we move forward, also that we can really contribute to the society with our science.
Mm. Yeah.
And not just live in a bubble and live in our very small research niche that then people in the world are working on that topic. I think we should expand, we should be multidisciplinary, but we should also always stay critical.
It's also something that you mentioned that I think it's important for the tenure trackers, is that don't take it personal.
Yes.
I always, sometimes the tenure trackers are very nervous. They go to the commissions, they have to present, they get very nervous, and they get very defensive. And I always say, do not get defensive, be transparent, open. Well, this thing, I did not do it well, I could not do it, but I will try to do it, or I'll do it in the next step, or I did not have time to do it, or I be honest. And that's really so much,
because
sometimes I have seen tenure trackers that they get so in the defensive, and then it spoils everything, because
it works against you.
If I'm in such a committee, I mean, I see when you get defensive, it doesn't help. You should just open, transparent.
Yeah. And I've been also in different committees for example, grant application, and you have these interviews, and you see when a person is coming with a smile to the room, it already makes a big difference. If it comes almost with tears or in a very defensive mode. And also, if you ask critical questions, even if the candidate doesn't know the answer, if you say it honestly, because maybe nobody knows the answer, but this is what you would like to research.
Yeah.
If you say it honestly, it comes much more across than if you try to fake it and to give a very confident answer, which is not giving an answer. So that is also very important. But for me, I am still struggling with that indeed, not take it personal.
Yeah.
And also always think, okay, what is your goal? I mean, I have my goal I want to reach. Maybe I should compromise a bit on the way, but I'm focusing on my final goal. But it's always difficult on the process to distinguish yourself and to see the big picture.
Yeah.
And that's why it's good to have a coach or somebody more experienced to you from the department to discuss these things. I think I'm always trying to discuss, take a distance, but think about that.
Yeah.
Self-reflect and indeed try to see the big picture, because that will help you, and the common goal. Of course, if you work with people on a EU project or other projects, they might be some disagreements of how it should go, but there should be always a common goal that everyone should work towards, and maybe you need to compromise sometimes on the way.
Yeah,
that is always part of working with people and negotiating and try to reach the common goal in the end.
Yeah.
But that is difficult. I struggle myself as well with this.
Yeah, so there comes a kind of a humility with that. So if you always put your ego in every feedback that you get, then you're also not seeing yourself as part of a bigger thing, a small part of a bigger thing, but you see yourself as the big thing. Yeah. Right?
You are not the center of the universe.
No.
That's definitely not the case. Yeah. The universe is very big.
Yeah. But you are the one who wants to get through the bug. So there is the, and I think that's what's the difficult part, right? Because it's about your career. So in the end, it's about your opportunities in science. And
oh, but you also need to be able to contextualize, eh? Also in your back. And that's also one of the things that it's also asked to have a large... I mean, we're talking about mixing now the personality and, let's say, the content. Eh? So you, content-wise, you have to also be able to have an overview, to contextualize things. But then you should also be able to do the same with your own character and ego, eh? So in your with yourself. So these are the two different things which, in fact, should be taken in the same way, just to take a little bit a step back and look where you are in science, but also as a person.
Mm.
That's why I think it's not so bad, this portfolio, that every 3 years we need to present at the back, because it makes you indeed summarize what you've done and how you see the big picture and how you see the future. But it should be less into the details, because I also spend so much time on making tables and hours that they are known. I mean, I spend them, it's obvious. Maybe it should be indeed more conceptual than...
It's also a way to observe, to look what I have done. When I was writing it, I thought, oh, it was not so bad. But I've done so many things that you sometimes, because you are always running and you're always doing things that you don't realize everything that... It's good. It's a reflection. A reflection on what you have done. It's a reflection on your work or what your achievements. It is indeed very good.
It is useful.
It takes a lot of time. This portfolio, as I did it, it's a longer thing. It takes a lot of time. But indeed, when I was doing, I also thought about it. It was good to do it. Yeah. To realize where I was, what I've done, where I was going, to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's this time that you need to think.
Yes.
And then you're forced to do it.
You don't have time, but you have to make the time because you want to pass the buck.
That's very good.
So it seems as if both of you also are able to give a positive spin on things that maybe some people see as something that is, you know, an obligation, you have to go through it, it's a hassle. And then both of you say, yeah, but you know, it also has positive sides. So that might also be a strategy with which you can get through, you know, difficult.
Yeah, but I never had a bad experience with the bachelor. I entered already as an associate professor, so I had two or three bags, but they were a very nice experience. So I did not find it very...
Because you smiled when you entered.
Maybe, because I'm always smiling. But it was, and because I'm very transparent, and I also always close to myself. So it's, I don't try to pretend someone I am not. But also, of course, you also, in the back, you also get nervous and you also get irritated. Well, I have to write all these and I have to put so much time. But the back itself, I found it a nice experience. So yes, I found it really nice. And I have also heard of other experience, but what I'm talking about is the thresholds for the different positions. They're very demanding. So for a professor, we have to have 10 PhD students. Eh? So on average, on 3 years, it's quite a lot, two promotions, PhD defenses per year. It's quite a lot. It is feasible, but also at a certain time, I mean, I want to excel, or I want to have the group because I want to have the group. It's not because of a bug, you know. So at the end, it's also what you want to do and how big you want to go.
Mm.
It should not. It could be that also some professors would like to have a smaller group, and I think that's not okay, not to be allowed.
Mm-hmm.
To be honest,
mm-hmm.
So we should not always be all the same. So that's where our also university is going to really everything has to be standardized. And I think the university should be the place for non-standards, that where non-standards freedom to be allowed. And if someone wants to have a group with 15 PhDs and the other one is really good and wants to have a group as a professor with 5 PhDs, why should not this be allowed? I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes the efficiency, these small groups could be more efficient than these big groups, yeah, because it's very hard to maintain, you know, how high standards if you have to supervise so many people that you don't have time for. But if you have a few people and you really focus on the outcome, and you have time to read their papers and to publish good articles, this could be much more efficient than having this large-scale manufacturing
process for PhDs. Yeah.
I am personally also more to, I want to have the time to invest and to connect to the group and to know exactly what's going on, to enjoy the science.
Yeah, no, but I mean, what I think that's very personal, but I think there should be allowed
for both.
So for me, that's more the point is that there should be, the differences should be allowed in academia and university level. Mm. So that should always be. And that's the tendency I see now is that it's time more should be more standardized. And control, there's a lot of control and administration and all the systems. It's very different than many years ago. All the systems, all the control signatures. It gives also a little bit a non-safe a fear. Do that is something wrong. The signing, I see. But that's the feeling it creates also. People get a little bit afraid. Did I do something wrong? Well, I think some things will always go wrong. There will always be some mistakes. And for each mistake we make a rule, I think that's how it's happening, it will not work because there are exceptions. And you don't need to make rules for every mistake there is. And I think that's the tendency that so there's a mistake, make a rule. So that's how it is. That's with a lot of things, and a mistake is an exception, of course. And mistakes should be said, should be open. Should say, this was a mistake, should not happen again. But we don't have to put the rules for all mistakes.
No, it's the same with inclusiveness. Now, VUR is changing its strategy against that, not against, but to be more inclusive. Finally, I thought it was about time. But this process will take time, and it's also like, how do you set rules for inclusiveness, right? It should come natural. People should appreciate each other. They should see each other as equals and not separate in groups of nationalities, or, you know. And that is a process, but it is also very personal. If you are putting aside your ego, that already will help a lot because you can see and you can embrace the differences, you can embrace the strength of people coming, thinking in a different way.
I think what's interesting is there's been research on this, the whole diversity that Rumiana talked about. If you have someone who's exactly like you, then you don't have diversity in thinking, so, you know, you don't get creative output. If you look at team performance, the more diverse a team, the better the performance, but only if the team feels safe, because otherwise the team will perform worse than a homogenous team, because then you will get subgroups who will compete against each other, and then the output of the team is going to go down the drain.
Yeah, that's true. So this will only work if the group leader thinks that he or she doesn't have the best way of thinking, that accepting that there could be other ways, and also accepting being flexible in that. And as scientists, I think we all do this, right? We go in all different ways to research and to get the knowledge. So I think we should be more used to that.
As more older or more senior we get, I think we get more used to it. But I also see that in the students, so we have design courses within masters with international groups of 8-9 students. And we see exactly that. If there is safety, it will work very well because we have Indonesian, the Dutch normally are very direct, and they just come, the new people just came to Wageningen 2 years ago, so they still 1-2 years. So you see that if there's not safety, there will be groups, there will be a dominant person, and the others, there will be... You see also the, because they evaluate each other, so I see that. So I coach them also. So I see the evaluations, and then you see, oh, this one doesn't talk, the other one doesn't talk. I'm not always with them, but I see the evaluations, and you see that the foreigners very often, they don't talk, and that, and you also see that the work is really less, with the less quality than, for example, in a group where you see that they save the talk and they also dare to talk. But you see, when it works, it's really fantastic to see. That and I had now, I just finished this course, and it was really, there was a group that was really fantastic, and I and everyone was so direct and open and talking, and it was a very good group. They also had a good grade. But it's true what you say, indeed. But we get to know, because we are a bit more experienced when they are young. You see that it's a struggle.
Indeed, when they come, I'm also coordinating the Frontiers in Molecular Life Science course, which is international master program. So it's the first course of the first year of the master.
Oh, yeah.
And then you have like 10-20% foreigners. They just came. Some of them, they were late for lectures because they don't have a place to sleep even. And it's always, you see these, all these struggles. But I think it's also from the work and in the end the results of the ideas they get, because they have to work in groups of two and then in a bigger group of eight people with one coach. It's amazing. Yeah. I think there is really potential. Of course, in all these group dynamics, it takes time.
It's okay.
So when you have a short course of a few weeks and you have a completely new group, of course, they don't have time to get used to each other and accept each other.
Yeah.
But
they learn something.
People are quite flexible. Yeah.
All right. To finish up, if you could invite three historical female figures to a dinner party to discuss leadership, who would they be? And what's the question that you would ask each of them?
Oh my, now I did not prepare this one. So Rumiana, you can start.
So I would invite Marie Curie, of course. She was the first female scientist to get a Nobel Prize, but also the first person to get two Nobel Prizes in her lifespan, which was really an achievement. And you would see her in these old pictures of the conferences, all men, and she was the only woman in the center, sitting, being there, which was very important for female scientists, I think, and still like a role model that you can do this if you're passionate about it. You can do anything you want. You should not be restricted even by the societal norms. And then one of my favorites is, of course, Angela Merkel. And something, a very nice quote I have from her, always be more than you appear and never appear to be more than you are. And this is how I also would like to have my leadership style.
Oh.
Indeed, stay true to yourself and indeed even surprise people that you can be even better than they underestimate you.
Can I sign down on on the choices of Rumiana?
What she said. Angela Merkel is still alive, so you might even meet her at some point.
If I meet her, indeed, I will ask her how to be efficient and still maintain peace in the leadership. Because she managed to maintain peace and still keeping the country going very well and still being very modest and very... And she was actually a scientist.
Biologist, right?
Physics in Moscow University. Uh-huh. She was fluent in Russian as well.
She is.
Amazing.
No, I also
to have
a,
I think we
respect. Mm-hmm. No, I think it shows very too good. Marie Curie comes always to my mind, of course. It probably was not easy for her. These pictures, they are very, they say a lot. No, I will, I just subscribe to Rumiana.
All right.
I also, I believe they are really very good examples.
Is there otherwise something that you want to tell Veritenia trackers?
Be yourself, always. Don't fake it, don't put a mask, don't live in this fake reality. Because at one point you will face the reality, and then it will be difficult.
Hmm.
Yeah.
This has been The Human Side of Research, brought to you by Downside Up. We are curious if and how this conversation has sparked your interest. Send us your feedback and thoughts regarding this episode to podcast@downsideup.nl. Maria and Rumiana's email addresses are in the show notes. We would also love to hear from you if you would like to speak on the podcast or if you have suggestions for future topics and guests. If you need help improving the work culture in your team, check out our website for ways we can help. Until next time.